Welcome to The Ether. Today is Saturday, March 12th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, a CeFi space, the Luna Hour, second wallet for Luna Strategies. Let's take a listen.
Hey, everybody. We'll get some folks in. I had a little time before work this morning. pulled into a drive-thru, got some food, and figured I'd share some theory here with folks. Let's wait for a few folks to come in, but basically revolving around strategically using second wallets to do things that you wouldn't do with your primary wallet. And these kind of ideas could get interesting.
I think the first question is, what drive-thru did you pull through?
Sonic for the bacon croissant sandwich, obviously.
Good one.
The Sonic number one costs like, I don't know, $10 today, I think, which is kind of ridiculous, but okay.
At this point, I pump gas. I'm like, well, there goes maybe one Luna.
Yeah, exactly. Luna. Fuck it.
No, it's good. Yeah, that'd be exciting to hear some second wallet strategies. How do you think about the price? It's basing pretty well. I was watching it yesterday and today. Around that 80, 90.
Yeah, nothing too exciting going on. You know, whether you think that, you know, there's kind of a double top pattern or not, or whether that even matters, which I don't think it does. If you look at the monthly, you really just have just a big rising wedge on the monthly. So looking pretty good to me. And transactions are escalating. Raul Paul came on to Real Vision doing a Twitter space, I guess, for the first time. And I guess since a lot of us have, you know, plenty of folks that follow, you know, he had like thousands of people on there. And he did mention Luna briefly. It's interesting how he doesn't post about it at all. But he's clearly an owner, as is Remy, obviously, who works with him at Real Vision. But he mentioned it as one of the few like non-bullshit blockchains with real use case and actual real transactions on the network, and just talked about how you can basically, you know, price the value of a network based on the number of transactions on it. And of course, you know, transactions on Terra have been on a parabolic tear, actually, if you pull it up on station.terra.money. Anyway, we could probably just hop to the kind of idea at hand. This kind of came about because of what Danku said the other day, where, you know, he was borrowing, so he was moving Luna to a second wallet because he needs to be able to spend his money, and he needs to do so in a way that is sort of like tax efficient, And he wants to do things with his Luna that he wouldn't do with his main wallet. And that kind of led me to some thoughts about, you know, how we could use that thinking to do some different things. You could just basically look at your secondary wallet. You know, we some of us use it obviously as a public facing wallet. Like, you know, if you want to interact with, say, whatever you care about, NFTs or like a debit card or, you know, whatever, you can, you know, having a separate wallet that you do not transfer funds into, that you you load up via a centralized exchange just for privacy purposes, obviously makes sense. You know, and then what he had mentioned was, okay, he's moving his Luna to a secondary wallet, and then he was borrowing against that Luna for UST, sort of taking on leverage on Anchor, using that UST to do whatever the hell he wants with it, and then presuming that that Luna is essentially gone as far as he's concerned, meaning, you know, not that different from just selling it. So, you know, if you do that at a reasonable pullback, you know, similar to how you might borrow Luna to buy more at a bottom, or just simply borrow at bottoms because it's less risky, you can technically take that loan out with the full intention of never paying it back. And let's say you have 100 Luna and 25% of it gets liquidated. You've now sold 25% of your Luna, so 25 Luna. You still have 75. The odds of getting liquidated dramatically further go down even further. But now you have access to all that UST. You still have your Luna, basically. If Luna does really well, you know, heads off to 200, well, then great. You can just basically, you know, sell some Luna at that time, pay off your loan, and you still have all your Luna. And now you have had UST to spend with it. Worst case scenario, let's say, I don't know, 50% of your Luna gets liquidated, sort of like whatever. You allow that to happen theoretically, or manage the LTV on it, quite frankly, if you really had the ability. And now you can just keep your exposure to Luna without having to sell it necessarily to use it, especially since the cost to borrow is so low, obviously. The second wallet basically helps allow you to have a totally different risk profile on your wallet versus what you have on Anchor on your primary, which can really help you like formulate new strategies to go about. So I was thinking about this, yes, you know, I was thinking about this overnight. It was like kind of looking at my these bonded Luna ARBs that we're doing, right? So we're getting a sizable chunk of new Luna to the extent that, like, when we're getting 2% ARBs, you know, you can imagine increasing your Luna stash by, let's say, 10% within 5 months, which is pretty decent, possibly more, depending on how good your ARB rates are. And you could take that bonded Luna that is essentially now, or the ARB Luna or whatever, the new Luna that you just got for free, sort of, use that as house money. And then you could actually, instead of doing what Donku said, you could move that house money basically over to a new TerraStation wallet. And you can basically loop that, right? You similar to how you'd loop Luna normally. But if you're not so comfortable looping your entire stash, but you have Luna that you've already gotten free, and you do a full looping, which means basically going into Anchor, posting that bonded Luna as collateral. So let's say, you know, you have, let's say, 100 Luna. You post that as collateral. You borrow against, you know, to the max borrow possible on that. I don't know what that number is. I think it's like 75% or 65% or whatever that is. And then you go and take that UST, get yourself more Luna. And of course, do this again and again until you sort of max that out. So that gets you to approximately a 2x, let's say a 1.75 to 2x leverage position on Luna. And let's say you've gone from like 100 Luna to 180. And I don't know what the max efficiency on that is if you go all the way through this. But if
I already have a calculator coming with this, so I'm writing this down.
So if you basically were to get liquidated, you're going to go down from, let's say, 100 and let's say 80 Luna down to, you know, whatever 25% of that is. So let's say you lose, you know, what does that come out to? So you lose about, you know, 50 Luna, let's say. So in theory, you're still ahead in your leverage position, even in the face of a liquidation, but you can get a tremendously higher leveraged exposure to using house money and basically, you know, play that game a little bit more aggressively. And you could use some common sense when it comes to doing that too. You're not going to necessarily do this at a top necessarily. You could kind of wait till some pullbacks happen. So we're like, you know, there's a, you know, 10% pullback from the top, let's say right now. You know, you could start doing this at maybe like 15, 20% pullbacks and get into a reasonable safe zone where you're not likely to get badly liquidated either way. But now you have a substantially more exposure to Luna in the process. Other ways you could theoretically do something like this would be like a perpetual on KuCoin. The problem is that on those perpetuals, they are perpetual, but they sort of suck if you go long term. The fees will eat you alive. And it doesn't make sense to hold that for like a multi-month period. In crypto, if you realize that basically significant even dead cap bounces and trend reversals happen usually over a 6-month time period off the bottom, you don't really want to be in a KuCoin perpetual for that whole time, right? Anchor Borrow is cheap. Your accrued interest is relatively small, especially with the ANK rewards, which, you know, you could use those and also, of course, get more Luna with those if you'd like, or you could end up using those ANK rewards and selling them and paying down the loan if you wanted to, just like usual. Or you could just stake them if you think the price of ANK is appropriate, and you can get the yield off of that as well. Or you could take that ANK and combine it with some UST. You could play some games on Mars Protocol, which has some interesting leverage capability there. You could do like ANK UST in Spectrum, which has like a 200% APY. Auto-compounded. So there's some interesting games you could play with your Anchor tokens that you get, obviously. But the concept here is you can be way more aggressive with a small wallet with house money that you've sort of already earned to take on more exposure than you would with your regular wallet, you know, where you wouldn't want to be going to crazy levels of LTVs and manage large quantities of money that you might have. So this I think judiciously used in small quantities can do what Donku does, which is to extract UST and just assume that liquidation's fine if it happens. Use that for spending money instead of selling your Luna, or the opposite of that, or a slightly different approach would be to use that UST and just lever up Luna with at extremely low risk to yourself because you've got it through the BLUNA ARBs. So I'm not necessarily saying, oh yeah, everyone go in and lever up on a wallet with your life savings. What I'm saying here is that, you know, you want to do this using low risk, small amounts, and you could use a separate wallet for each, you know, looping strategy theoretically. There's some other concepts I was looking into as well, where you could potentially do a strategy where the last loop results in getting something with a fairly high consistent yield, and then using the yield to pay down the loan also. You know, we're going to be getting bonded Avalanche and essentially bonded, we have bonded Ethereum and other things. You could also manage your strategy by using bonded Ethereum as a possible position, because its price doesn't move as aggressively in any given day as Luna's. So that could be potentially used as a way to sort of mitigate the volatility of that position as well. So there's a lot of interesting ways to play with this. But maybe kind of open up for a little discussion here about what people have been doing and maybe tried something like this before.
It sounds, I think the one thing that I'm trying to still figure out is the separate wallet. I try to keep it detached from my main wallet. So I keep going back to KuCoin to go back. I don't know if you're just connecting them and you're saying screw it, but I'm trying to make sure they're never linked together on the blockchain. Have you done something similar to that, or are you just connecting them regardless?
I think if this is not meant to be a public facing wallet, then it doesn't necessarily matter if it's, you know, you're going to keep it private either way.
Yeah.
If you're trying to keep it obscured for, you know, any number of other reasons, then yeah, there's different ways to consider doing that. Once we have like Void protocol and some other tactics, it's going to make secondary wallets a little bit easier to keep private. You could also potentially achieve some privacy ultimately in the not so distant future via Thorchain as well, where you can swap to some things and then create a wallet that route.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of like a KuCoin in the middle then for me, once Thorchain can switch that. So that's a good point.
Yeah. The concept here is not for folks to necessarily go crazy. It's really to take small positions, which you are comfortable with a higher risk profile, but not having to blend that risk profile into your existing anchor. Because anchor doesn't obviously allow you to take multiple separate positions, which is perhaps sort of a weakness of anchor, where you can't manage multiple loans simultaneously. They've did it that way to keep it simple, but
Essentially what you're
functional perspective.
Let's take a bunch of Luna that we have. Let's create an offshoot of your free ARBs or free that you're getting, kick it over to the wallet, and then keep leveraging that up to the max to max out what you can get from UST and use that for whatever you want. And if that gets liquidated, who cares? It's house money. So it's like kind of showing that faucet drip in there to see what you can maximize from that perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
I know Zach came up. What's up, Zach?
Hey, man. I just wanted to say when Luna gets on Coinbase, it's going to be real easy to transfer that money over to be able to use in real time, because they have that card where you can immediately transfer it to UST, and then you're immediately spending and earning Ethereum back, which is kind of insane. And that's how I've been basically earning my Ethereum as well. I buy in, and whenever I earn, I transfer to my card, and then I use that for my daily, you know, living, and I'm earning back Ethereum right back. So whenever Luna gets onto Coinbase, I think everything's going to be a lot easier for everyone.
Yeah, you're referring to the Coinbase debit card?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Yeah, I use that a bit too. Unfortunately, the problem so far with that Coinbase card is the yield on the thing. The cashback rewards are high. It's like 4%, but the yield on the available coins that they have is basically nothing, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Unless you go and stake your Ethereum and all that jazz. But I think that's what I kind of posted earlier today. An even better thing is going to be when Voyager's 3% cashback debit card comes.
Yep.
And USDC is like a 10% APY there while it's sitting there. And then you can basically use your cashback. That system's interesting because you can pay your like mortgage and other major expenses that you can't normally use with a debit card.
Oh, wow.
You can use ACH on that and get like 3% cashback rewards if you have sufficient VGX tokens. That's a little bit of a different program. So that's coming out in the next few weeks, I think, for the debit card. We're lucky,
beautiful.
Right?
10 days, the next set of cards are going out.
I got to check my mail, cool. So see if they already sent me mine. But anyway, it's going to provide another interesting sort of like cashback and saving opportunity as well. But anyway, yeah.
Let's say we take a little bit of the yield and we max out our borrow with the UST. Where's the best place you think right now, Steffi, to take that free money to leverage back up again? Like, where do you go to leverage up that UST? So you really max this out. So who cares if you get liquidated on this?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Probably. I haven't fully investigated, and this is where I wish Hush was on right now. I haven't fully investigated like the max opportunity on looping via like Edge protocol or Mars protocol or some combination of those. The other thing that's going to be super interesting with this strategy is going to be the kinetic money situation as well, right? Like you could go borrow off your future yield first. So let's say I have, you know, 100 Luna and kinetic money comes out and they're going to basically give me a self-repaying loan and give me cash for something that can't be liquidated, essentially. Then I take that cash and then loop the heck out of it, right? and so again, you're sort of playing with sort of your future yield, and the risk is again super low, and then you can loop the crap out of that in this context as well. But I haven't fully investigated like all the different ways on that are coming to Mars, Field of Mars, and Edge. And Edge is kind of in beta too, so I would caution people about that. I think their audits are still being done, but if you go play around and look at it, you could probably get some idea of what type of possibilities might emerge from that.
And the nice thing, even if it's beta, but we're talking about your ARB yield and it's free UST, it's kind of still okay because it's still house money in that case.
So it's exactly. Yeah. And if you wanted to be a little bit less aggressive, what you could do is the last looping that you do. So in other words, you've got your bonded Luna, you have barred against it, got UST, you got more Luna, you deposit that as collateral, you borrow more UST, and then maybe on the third loop in, you don't actually loop it, and you just take that UST, park that last bit in Anchor Earn, and you could manage your LTV with that just like you would otherwise. So, or you take that last bit of bonded Luna, you throw it on Nexus Protocol with a self-regulated APY of like, you know, 14% or whatever it is, and then you just use the bonded Luna to so you max it out all the way through, and the last loop of bonded Luna that you have, you could use that and park it in Nexus and get yield from it on Nexus, and then you can use that to as you acquire bonded Luna with that strategy, you can use that to manage your LTV downward using the profit that you're getting from the yield, and then sort of even de-risk that position so that you don't get liquidated necessarily. So there's two different ways to look at this. You max it out to the point where you're almost surely going to get liquidated, and see how, and that's one possible tactic. And then there's one tactic where you don't intend to get liquidated, but you're able to do more looping than you feel comfortable with on your main account. Either way, it's just a matter of personal preference.
Yeah. I think we had Triple. Yeah. Come on. Go ahead, Triple.
Yeah. Hey, Lucky. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm driving right now.
Yep. All good.
If you're not worried too much about necessarily like getting liquidated or anything, if it's totally house money, but you don't want to have the volatility exposure and you just want to stay in, you want to max your yield on the Anchor Earn side, you can do the looping on Mirror where you take, some UST or you take some AUST after you've deposited money into Anchor Earn. You go over to Mirror and you basically borrow and then sell a stock that you think is either just going to, you know, not move too much to the upside or potentially go down. And then you just loop that. I mean, you can loop that like 9-10 times. And on the first amount, like on the amount, the first kind of like borrow and sell, you're getting that that Anchor yield on that full amount, plus then you get the extra cash back, and then you just get the progressively less and less cash back each loop you do. But it can jack up your stablecoin yield on the UST side by like from 20% to like 70% or 80% if you do it 6 or 7 times. So that's another thing. Like, I mean, obviously there's the risk if the stock goes up, you could either not make that much or potentially even get liquidated. But
that's a good point, Triple, because right now I look at the traditional markets a lot. And if my theory is holding upright with the SPY, you know, maybe a little bit lower, going back down to the 4,000 range, I might take something like that, create this spinoff wallet. When the SPY hits that 4,000 mark, I might just go all in and loop some like SPY calls for a time period and just max it out and say, you know, for the next 3 months, if the market just climbs a little bit,
I can maximize that. But if it goes the other way, then if I get liquidated, I get liquidated. Who cares?
Well, you can't really do the strategy on the long side. You can only do it on the short side because it involves selling, right? So you wouldn't be able to do it with like calls. Well, there's no options on Mirror anyway, but you would only be able to do it if you want to go short something, basically. And that allows you to use AUST. So you're still getting your 20%. Then you buy the stock with AUST, you sell it, you get your UST, put it, you know, rinse, repeat a bunch of times.
I'd have to like more of like a delta neutral then to maximize something or something over there.
Yeah, you could do that. You'll get less yield. You'll have less price exposure. Well, you'll have almost no price exposure. But yeah, you could do that. I've been playing around with this. I'm not like doing it significantly, but I've been playing around with this with like the Coca-Cola stock. Because I just don't see it like, you know, 2x-ing or anything anytime soon, although you never know. But yeah, it's an interesting little strategy if you just want to generate a little more stable coin yield using Anchor.
Do you foresee a strategy where there's a mix of the two somehow?
A mix of the
Mirror and mix of the Anchor Borrow, such that it might be more feasible to unwind a position, perhaps if you could, you know, if you needed to.
Well, maybe. I've never thought of that. Do you mean that, like, because Luna is volatile to the upside, it just makes it easier to unwind a position because you have more like cushion there in case the stock goes up? Or I'm not.
Yeah, sure. like you could take a different risk profile on your last loops.
Oh,
such that you could somehow exit if you needed to, if you felt like managing that Mirror LTV situation you're talking about.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly never something I haven't thought about that, but, I can look into it. I mean, I think that ultimately whenever you're using AUST outside of Anchor, in my opinion, not financial advice, but you know, it's always good. It's always a good idea to make sure you never use the full amount of your AUST in anything outside of Anchor, right? In fact, I never go more than 1/3. If I'm going to do something with AUST, I always ensure that 2/3 of my AUST is still sitting in my Terra Station vault. And that's
so you can manage it, unwind essentially, exit a position if you don't like it.
Exactly. And I never do a half. I actually just stop it at 1/3. Because movement can happen, you know, you don't want to get in a situation where all of a sudden you have to bring in external capital really, you know, quickly, and it's just stressful.
Hey, Triple, why can I buy a long MSPY but then just sell it on the market and reloop that? Because I can buy a long.
Yeah, you can buy and then
I can buy a long buy.
Yeah, you can. But you're gonna
sell that straight to the market, right? And then reloop it or no?
Well, but you can't use, I don't think you can buy it with AUST.
Oh, you can with AUST. Okay.
Maybe you can now. I don't know, but you might want to check that. But yeah, as far as I know, you can't buy it with AUST.
Because I'll look at it. I'll see what options are. I know the short strategy that Hutch did, and I think, was it Rebel DeFi with the
gold the or silver or something like that?
The silver.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad I learned about that from Hutch when I did, because I was able to do that for my mom and my stepdad with SPY. I actually went short SPY through Mirror right before it tanked with their funds. Not, I should have done it with my own funds too, but I did it for them because they're older and they're super exposed to the SPY. I watched that video that Hutch put together about shorting the SPY with Mirror, and it was like such good timing because I was like, oh yeah, my parents are super exposed to SPY.
It was the week before the market crashed. I was so pissed.
Yeah, his timing was amazing with that. But anyway, yeah, good chatting with you guys. I'll go back to listening.
Cool.
I think Logan came up. What's up, Logan?
Yo. So got a question about kind of like current price action. Obviously, we've had somewhat of like a double top on the daily, and we're kind of obviously retracing it a bit down to, what are we at, like 90 something? I don't even, I haven't looked at price to know exactly what we're at, but Just curious to know, or what your guys' opinion is on price. So we're like, yeah, right at like 90. What your guys' opinion is on price retracement? Like, are we going to consolidate, do you think, in like the 80 range, or like possible dip back down to like 50? Just kind of curious where your guys' thoughts are on kind of like best case scenario for consolidation, and then like worst case scenario before obviously the next leg up.
I kind of like this 80 to 100 zone. It's the least, it has the least amount of volume in terms of like sort of fill for building a floor. It takes, just judging by past 1.5 years price action, it takes about a month to have a new floor price in the $80 to $100 range. If we spend about a month in this range, so the remainder of this month and a little bit into April, then we should have a price floor that's very similar to like the $50 to $70 zone. So it's actually fine if we sort of languish sideways for a little bit, because we're still well above the 200-day moving average, which is at, I think, like $56 now. So as long as we're above the 200-day moving average and that moving average continues to rise upwards, our mean is essentially picking up pretty quick. I think the odds of getting Luna again below $55 is approaching, I think it's approaching zero, in my opinion. Again, you know, so of course it's going to go there. excuse me. But and then of course, you know, I think the LFG buy at $51, or the LFG sale of Luna at $51 to a bunch of sort of, you know, VCs and large wallets helps cement a price floor there. Because you can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, these guys don't get in to make a 1 or 2x gain. You know what I mean? Well, they're not getting in at 50 to go make it to 100. They're getting in to at least go to like 250 to 3 before they buy action positions.
It's more than that. It's more than that. Those Luna buys were actually vesting for between 1 and 4 years, number one. But number two, let's say you spent on average, let's say you spent $55 and you bought a, you know, $50 million worth of Luna at that price. Don't think for a second those people are like going all in. And, you know, if you get another dip down to 50 or 45, they don't have dry powder waiting for that event. So there's a tendency to size positions such that you can buy the dip larger, sort of more of a dynamic DCA is the smart money way to do this. So the odds of getting there again are low, only because you know you have cemented a good solid chunk of dip buyers at that range. The other reason I think it's improbable to get down there again is that we just have way less supply of Luna than we did then. We have way less supply. You know, it's just the speed of supply reduction is really, really aggressive still. It doesn't appear that we're going to be stopping burning Luna till or slowing down below maybe around 20 billion UST market cap, which would be awesome. And because of the rate of burn being somewhat capped, unless that cap is raised, we appear to be consistently above peg and demand is high on a daily basis. So yeah, a lot happening, I think, plus the LFG you know, announcement that more money is going to go to the LFG for more Bitcoin and whatnot, has a good, yeah, like,
what exactly does that, obviously it's, I mean, Doge playing like 4D chess with, I mean, I think the biggest problem is obviously like the cannibalization or just like the tribalism between blockchains, obviously. And you see that, you see division, whereas I think what Doe's doing brilliantly is like creating unity instead of division and connectedness. And like with that Bitcoin move, obviously it's great marketing, but when it comes to the use of that Bitcoin, what exactly is that Bitcoin being used for? It's used to what, as like collateral to back UST.
Like, what was the real purpose of sizing up that Bitcoin position?
It's not for collateral. It's simply to establish a money market where if UST depegs to the downside, then that can be solved by basically converting that BTC to buying UST transiently and repegging if necessary, right? There's no, it's not a function of, it doesn't have to back anything. It just simply has to be present in a money market. So what would happen is if UST regained its peg, then that would be converted back to Bitcoin and that's the end of it. Like the idea here would not be to back it in a typical sense. The concept is you would use it just like the Luna burn mechanism to stabilize UST if needed. Just because as the system gets bigger and bigger, you know, is it going to be as reflexive or not? I don't know. But
so what would
like,
be the
it also it also is the... just to get it's also just to quiet down naysayers who are like, oh, you have to have, you know, have it backed by something. And then it's sort of a handshake to the Bitcoin folks, of course, as well.
Yeah. But what about if Bitcoin or so the reason why, I mean, there's only so many assets that you would necessarily want there to use to then try to get UST the peg. Like, I mean, obviously UST, you can't use UST to back UST or whatever. So was Bitcoin kind of like, it almost seems like it's one of the only options as far as like movability, right? Because like if you had cash, it's like there's no way to really move that. Like the only other thing is a stable coin almost, but it's like obviously UST is the dominant stable coin. So they're not going to keep money in USDT because who trusts that? So it kind of almost seemed like Bitcoin was the only option available, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin was among the few options because if you were to hold a substantial portion of another asset like a Polkadot or whatever, pick your L1. The issue with the other L1s is they're inflationary, and you don't want to necessarily be holding a whole lot of something that is falling in price now or has the possibility of falling in price substantially, also worse than BTC. So Bitcoin has, for better or for worse, you know, the least amount of volatility risk compared to some of the others. Now, one of the reasons to get a basket of things would really just be a handshake to other layer one communities. So, you know, for relatively low risk, since, you know, let's say you bought, I don't know, small amounts like $10 million worth of a variety of L1s that participate in the Luna UST network. There's a nice meme effect that goes with that too. So it might be worthwhile just for that reason alone. It's just cheap advertising. You have basically, you know, every layer one in the world is now tweeting about it at some point, and that creates.
Yeah, that makes total sense because it's like they spent what $40 million on the baseball team partnership, and it's like how a lot of those people aren't in crypto that are. And it's good to get exposure to normies, if you will. But then if you want to get more people into the Terra ecosystem that already have money in Bitcoin or other digital assets, that is an amazing strategy to essentially leverage other communities to get them talking about Terra and get that exposure. So that's definitely
Logan, that's strategy. Exactly right. Logan, I was just talking to my friend the other day about how like, for every, this is probably like the most valuable in terms of marketing. This is the most valuable dollar for dollar spend that you could do because, the value of the Bitcoin reserve isn't just that it acts as a Fort Knox kind of thing for Luna UST, but the marketing is incredibly, incredibly valuable. And, what's been super surprising for me, just kind of getting into this community over the last 6 months, is it's not a given typically that very technical people have like a deep understanding of marketing. But Do Kwon and the TFL people seem to have like a very instinctive kind of intuitive sense of how to market. And we all benefit tremendously from that, you know, because like you can have, it's kind of like Elon Musk. Like he's not what you would consider the, you know, like the, what the most people would consider like to be a great marketer. Like he's a technical engineer, but for whatever reason, he's an amazing marketer. Like he gets how to market. And Do Kwon seems to have like taken a page out of that book.
I mean, I think where more valuable marketing is, to be honest, is getting people to utilize the UST. So to me, spending $40 million for like Alice for something at Washington Nationals, that's where the power starts coming for us as Luna holders. I could actually care less if no more people buy Luna. I care more of the adoption of UST and how fast that can start hitting the US market or anywhere in the world.
Yeah, for me, the whole Washington Nationals thing was, it's been really interesting because I completely agree now. Like going back, if I could vote on any proposal that directly impacts adoption, I would rather vote for that than for like a sponsorship or something like that. So, but I guess we'll see, because maybe they'll introduce Alice or something to the people that go to the baseball stadium or something like that.
Go ahead, Mandivs. I know you're going to say something. Your mute's mic, Mandivs.
And before going too far off the beaten path here, if anyone has any questions regarding the topic of discussion originally, which is sort of managing risk differently in a second Terra wallet to do different sort of degen strategies, or if someone has ideas that are interesting, I'd love to hear it. I was dreaming up sort of a prism refracting looping strategy too, which maybe we can get into if whenever Mandiv gets done.
Yeah, I don't have much to say. I was just trying to say why LFG is spending in BTC for like depegging asset with for UST. Just think about the reason why Sailor is accumulating BTC. Like if you are putting 1.2 million right now in buying BTC, but over the period of time, as the value rises for BTC, how much reserve you're going to have at that time, right? Just think about that perspective. So 4 or 5 billion right now, it's not going to matter for them as long as, you know, the price of BTC will rise exponentially and you will be billions, and that DPEG thing is not going to be possible by anybody.
I mean, yeah, that's a great point, certainly.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that for sure. I think BTC's price right now is very reasonable from a buying perspective as well, just where it is on its overall trajectory. So I think, and then not only that, but there's plenty of TFL Luna sitting around. If we get a dip in BTC, you can damn well be sure they're going to buy more, because you don't go buy that much Bitcoin without planning to buy more on a dip. That's just how it works.
And at the same time, Luna price also rises, right? And he has a target. So TFL is not a great marketer, by the way. Triple Yak means they didn't do any single marketing up to now. Like the football stadium was the first one, I guess, and then this is the second one, right? But marketing is not something they want to do. Means spend money and get product sell. That's not the objective. They do this for the adoption at the wider range, like globally, how they can make it. So they are shooting for the markets which has larger audience involved, and it will be easy going sell for them. Not like, okay, spend every single day certain amount on advertisement and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, man, Dave, I disagree. I think they're amazing marketers because they focus on adoption.
I'm saying they haven't done any marketing till now.
They just started.
And now they started, they are bang on, like, you know, they are just putting nail on the head. How to do. And they know how to do it. So they are not wasting money in, like, crypto.com, right? You see everywhere, billboards, TV ads, and whatnot. They are not doing that, you know.
Do we know how much Luna they have? Not Luna Foundation Guard, but TFL itself.
Yeah, somebody tweeted yesterday about the whole Rizzo and how exactly they are doing it. Like, what's the proportion looks like? How much TFL holds? How much they have for LFG? And what's the plan for that? That's a whole thread out there.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, getting back to this, so one of the possibilities I was thinking of with use of Luna in a specific wallet would be, so if you look at the refracting process on Prism, you know, the most price neutral way to get Y Luna and P Luna, use the Y Luna for staking, especially if you have plenty of Prism tokens, is obviously to refract them, not necessarily buy the individual tokens. But let's say you did want max Y Luna exposure. Is ultimately the best way to do that to take your P Luna and just buy Y Luna? I'm not so sure that is in fact the way you would want to do that. And Lucky, maybe you can do some math or like run a couple of simulations on this. But imagine this instead. You take your, and P Luna's price is actually a little bit higher right now, so it actually is maybe more effective. But imagine you refract your Luna, you take your P Luna, you go ahead and buy, you sell that into Luna, not into Y Luna. You take that Luna, you refract it again. You take the Y Luna, you stake it. You have whatever P Luna again, you convert that to Luna, refract, and you just loop it over and over again until you have maxed out the amount of Y Luna exposure that you want. Now, why would you not want to just buy it outright on the AMM? The reason you don't want to buy it outright would be because Y Luna's price doesn't make sense to buy it outright. It's just too high,
right?
Compared to your P Luna. So I don't know that you get the most effective math there.
And you're saying do this? Are you saying do this with the bar that you did off of the second wallet?
Well, I think just in general, this is a strategy. Yeah. I don't know that you have to do it with that particular wallet, because this is not an unsafe strategy by any stretch of the imagination. So you're basically getting more of your yield potential. And especially if you have sizable amounts of Prism token too, you're getting just crazy yield anyway. And this creates a pretty effective looping situation where a large wallet, right? Because part of the problem on Prism right now is if you try to buy too much of one thing, so let's say you're in there and you're spending 10,000 Luna at a time, and a large wallet had to do this, then your problem is there's too much slippage and whatnot because the AMM is simply not liquid enough yet. Right. So if you were to loop it instead, you remember refracting gives you a perfect one-to-one one-to-one conversion to where you get an exact amount of P Luna, exact amount of Y Luna. And you can use this tactic, I think, to your advantage, and ultimately wind up with quite a lot of yield exposure, pretty readily. Now, the downside would be, of course, if your value of Y Luna were to go down over time, then your position is more exposed to that price action. But if your goal is to have just income, but still have general Luna exposure, sort of like what Danku was talking about, and you did this in a wallet where you ultimately are going to take those vested, either vested Prism tokens, or you're going to get your vested yield off your Y Luna, and you want to just extract that and spend it, you know, in life, then that's another possible way to have a cash flow stream while preserving a tremendous amount of Luna exposure. Either way, because obviously, even if Luna goes to $200, your Y Luna is probably going to approximately, you know, let's say approximately double. And you, in this process of refracting, you've actually gotten your Y Luna for cheaper than the market rate anyway, in a sense. So, you know, it might work out mathematically to where the risk is very, risk is very low by doing a refracting looping, instead of just selling your P Luna and buying Y Luna. So it's worth, I think, putting maybe a little spreadsheet simulation.
Yeah, I can put a little spreadsheet today and maybe get it out by tonight on that and see.
Yeah, that'd be a fun little strategy I was thinking about. And it's especially effective because if you have a substantial amount of Prism token, let me look and see what my yield is right now on my Y Luna. Here, one second. Okay, so I'm looking at my staking for Y Luna. I am currently personally getting 72.48% APY total, which is a base APR of 44.6, and then the amps APR of another 27.8. You know, some people have way more Prism token compared to their Y Luna, so obviously their amps APR may be higher. I don't know what the perfect balance is, by the way, in terms of ratio of Prism token to Y Luna, and maybe there isn't a perfect balance because that's going to vary depending on the price of Prism and the price of Y Luna. But it's still a pretty damn good APR, honestly, and I think is considerably more lucrative at the moment, at least, than, you know, simply straight staking my Luna somewhere. But with that looping process, you can generate quite a bit of cash flow to live off of. If, like Donku said, he needed to kind of live off of his crypto.
Yeah, because I think I have more Prism, less Y Luna. I'm getting 95.72% APR.
You're at 95.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's a pretty good ratio, I think. You know, within it, well, assuming that holds, of course, you know, that's going to depend on the price of Prism, because if Prism goes up, then the value of your yield is sort of higher if you're in the Prism farm. But you don't have to necessarily farm Prism token with that if you don't want to. You could just farm, you could use Y Luna like it you normally would as well. I don't know. I don't know if the yield is different if you accept it as Prism token versus not. But even the Prism token, though, has amazing yield as well. Right now, my Prism token in governance is making me, it's making me a good solid 77.8% staked. It's making me a 33.82% APR as well, which is pretty damn good. And it's been fluctuating between, I guess, like 30 and 45%, something like that, which is pretty decent. And the more of these kinds of interesting strategies emerge, the more traction you're going to get on the Prism AMM, and essentially get, like, you know, you're going to get a lot of decent transactional volume, which will keep that APR high, since the APR comes to the stakeholders as yield from transactional revenue. And that APR is not necessarily just the like token emissions or something like that. So I like the token economic situation here. Pretty happy with how both the Prism system is working. I'm liking the AMPS concept. I think it really helps gamify like holding pressure of the AMPS token. I'm sorry, of the Prism token, and really, you know, creates a reason to hold the Prism token if you're a heavy Y Luna user. But really, really good feedback mechanism. I think that the Prism AMPS concept, I think Jimmy and others have mentioned that, you know, you could consider using that for a governance tactic as well. The longer you hold, the more powerful your governance vote becomes, you know, in the context of like that, the discussion about Anchor Protocol and the issues that are around voting and changes. And it also came up in the context of like this Juno governance fiasco going on. This AMPS concept could be applied to that governance situation on top of the what it's being used for right now. It's pretty interesting using time as a time in the market, essentially, to reward your position. So I don't know. It's certainly a concept to consider. Even on a second wallet, it might be an interesting concept to consider as a cash flow source that one might use to, you know, fund your daily life if you have a chunk of Luna that you want to do this with. Yeah. Seems like.
All right. I think we had the Grumpster come up first, and then we'll knock him off as I go. Go ahead, Grumpster. Can you hear me, Savvy?
Yeah, you're there. Oh, you're good.
Okay. Maybe he's not there. Okay. When he's back, go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. I see that Jimmy and Ryan the Lion are on. I was just thinking about your Seppi's proposal for, you know, how to loop on P Luna. I guess my couple things. One, I'm just curious to see if When they originally put out the AMPS protocol, the amount set aside for the AMPS pool versus what was given to the standard pool, there was some suggestion that based on what the participation and or the interest rate that was being provided to the AMPS pool, that the amount of tokens may eventually shift to the greater benefit of the AMPS pool. And my question to Jimmy and Orion is that still on the table, and when would they make an evaluation about shifting that to kind of even increase the amount of interest that the AMPS holders would have? And then the second question I have is, now that they have the pools, you know, or they've iterated into the AMPS, my question is when are they going to start increasing the sort of the hashed holdings into the pool so that there would be more liquidity? Because like just buying even 10 P Luna or 10 Y Luna can throw off the price enough to where it doesn't match what's on the spot price. And so I'm just curious to see, you know, if that's in the works as well.
I don't think there's any formal announcements on timing of any of that, nor is there nothing fixed in stone as far as like changes to the way AMPS work. All of those are sort of ideas in the background, and you know, until they're brought about in some sort of, you know, governance strategy where, you know, some policies put in place, I don't think there is anything just yet. The hash thing, I'm not sure what exactly they're going to be doing, but I'd rather have more Prism token before they do it. that's kind of how I was looking at that alpha. So you want to be in before that happens.
They just requested, just so you know.
Yeah, we'll grab them on. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, good points. I think Jimmy's here. You want Jimmy? Any comments about this discussion? Anything that seems rational to you about it?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm at the gym, so it's a little loud in the background, but. For changing the ratio between base and boost, maybe in about, say, 30 to 60 days, if we have governance up, we might let the ex-Prism and AMPS holders kind of decide on what the new ratio should be, right? And by that time, we should get an idea of, like, what are people doing? Are they just claiming and staking, or... claiming, staking, and going all the way to pledging. So I think, yeah, maybe in about like 60 days, we might have some more data on like user behavior, and we can put up to vote what the new ratio should be. So we'll kind of let the community decide on that, and we might propose some new ratios for you guys. And then what was the other part again? I forgot.
Well, does the liquidity strategy, hashed. Oh, the hashed liquidity question, as far as what's happening with that?
Oh, yeah, soon.
Did we lose them?
It'll be soon. So we're just working out like details, schedule details. But yeah, just letting things stabilize a bit now that the farm's been out for about a little more than 6 days, 5-6 days or so. And then, Look forward to announcements soon.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Who's up next, Lucky?
Tachuki? rpelosi.eth.
Sorry. Oh, rpelosi. Yeah, Pelosi, go.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Good, good.
I just started screwing around with Prism. I refracted it's like 30 Luna or so. I just wanted to see if I'm doing this right or if you guys are using any other strategies other than this one here that I'm seeing. But what I did was refracted. The Luna took the P Luna, swapped half of it to Prism, put it into the LP, and then I took the Y Luna and I'm staking it in the farm. My question is that the most common strategy? Is that what you guys are doing? Or should I be taking the P Luna, trading it into a Y Luna, and then staking all of it that way? Or is it kind of is that the same difference? Or are there any others?
It depends. It depends, I would say. So when P Luna's price was what I considered too low or depressed, like at $12 and whatnot, Right around that price is when I did exactly what you're talking about, is basically throw that P Luna in with Prism and, you know, threw it in the LP. Now the value of my LP is higher. The yield on the LP is decent. It's sustainable, in my opinion. And the auto compounding of the LP should pretty much let me ride it now indefinitely with no particular concerns. If the price of P Luna falls, you know, some of my Prism token in that LP is going to go towards P Luna. If the price of the Prism token falls, vice versa. I think they're both sort of tied at the hip to some extent anyway, and that Prism is somewhat deterministic to Luna's price right now. And ultimately, I think they'll both tend to rise and fall together, which is exactly what's been happening. You know, and in certain circumstances, like now where P Luna went up to, like, I think it's $18 or something, it's fine because I end up, you know, getting more Prism token and vice versa. So it's just a slightly different yield exposure, a slightly different price exposure. But I think you want to be sure that you're happy with the price you pay for both sides of the LP at the moment that you enter it. So in my example, it worked out well because I sort of timed it, you know, well. I think what you can do is, the nice thing about the fact that Y Luna and P Luna are different in price is you could take advantage of that difference both in the refracting process and in the acquisition process when you have, you know, dry powder available. To me, it's like, if I have dry powder available, it makes sense to buy whichever is cheaper. And then what I do, I have a plan. So for example, if I buy P Luna today at $18, then it goes down to like $12, and I'm just going to double it and, you know, have a strategy for exponentially ordering the P Luna. And that's the strategy I'm continuing with. Once there is an actual order book or limit order strategy system on Prism, which I think is coming at some point because it's like hinted at the bottom of the page on Prism Swap, then I will ultimately, you know, just leave limit orders for prices that I like, possibly to acquire what I need. And so I think when you do the LPs, I think you should be really cognizant of what price you're paying for the components of the LP and not just simply look at the APY. And have a strategy for what it means if the price of one or the other goes up. So if the price of one side of the LP goes up or down, are you comfortable with what that means in terms of not really just impermanent loss, but the fact that the counterbalanced coin, you want more of it, right? So if you don't mind having more P Luna or more Prism, then that's a perfect LP. You could also do the Y Luna LP as well, or any of the other LPs on that system, depending on what your thesis is for getting into them.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Could you also talk about how do the amps work? Do you take the rewards you're making from the staking and the LP, and then you stake the Prism, you get the X Prism, and then you boost yourself, or did you allocate your Prism earlier than that?
That you bought, like for me, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were on that dip, I bought a bunch of amps. I staked them and then I converted them over to amps and I started accumulating amps. And then what that is when you're in the farm for the staking of the Y Luna, you get a boost APR based off of how many amps you've accumulated. So you don't, it's not based off rewards. It's you can use rewards if you have rewards, but if you had Prism before, you can just go to the bottom and stake them and then kick them over to amps, and then you'll start accumulating amps, which is like a booster.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you for that.
So if you did that today, so let's say you want to go buy like 100 amps or 100 Prism, you could go stake it, move it to amps, and then utilize it for whatever you're going to use as it accumulates. The one thing to know, though, your amps are continuing accumulating. So if you staked, like for me, I every 2 days or 3 days, I go in and just kind of re-up my booster. So it's like a snapshot in time per se. So don't forget to kind of do that if you guys are accumulating.
Yeah, at the bottom, it tells you what your amps per day that you're accumulating is. And you'll notice that the amps per day is like a fixed quantity in a sense. And the compared to your total amps, at the very beginning, when you're getting a lot of amps, like let's say, for example, for the first month, you probably want to compound them much faster because it's a greater proportion of your total amps that you have. You know, a few months goes by and the new amps coming in are just a small fraction of your total. It may not be so imperative to, like, you know, be reboosting them every day or whatever. So, yeah, keep an eye on the mathematical effect on the total boost effect. But what it does is it punishes the saver. I'm sorry, punishes the seller and benefits the saver in that the amps are your proportion of the total yield pool is increasing versus someone who plays games and sells their Prism or just has Y-Luna staked without the Prism token. So it has a pretty strong deterministic effect on the Prism token price by providing not just utility, but a time-based exponential utility and auto compounding effect. So yeah, there's a lot of good math that goes into how that works.
Yeah, I don't see why I'm ever going to unstake these Prism things for like at least a year. Like I don't see
exactly
like
if you're going to bother doing this, you might as well just push it to make the max use of the thing.
So like my numbers, right, are like I get like 1,000 amps a day per se. So like for me, it's like, okay, I probably have to go click it every day just to boost it because it ups my other APY. And it's like, as more things come onto this platform, it's just a benefit to hold these forever. So
just as a point of clarification though, I mean, if once you put the X Prism into the amps pool, as long as you continue to X Prism and you can keep adding X Prism. But if you remove any of the X Prism, your amps vault goes to zero. So that vault is untouchable, to the point where you can keep adding and you'll earn more amps. But each X Prism in there has a limited, like 0 to 100. That accrues over time. I think Jimmy said that was like 100 days or 150 days. So each X Prism will earn up to 100 amps.
Yep.
But if you ever remove an X Prism from that vault, your amps start counter goes to zero, and then you have to start over.
So and that's, I think that might go back to then the question of the claim and pledge, or claim, pledge, and stake. Then, because then, you know, if you're earning the Prism, are you kicking those back over to the vault to kick up your amps, or then do you just start claiming those and just holding them? That's probably a personal strategy then on what you want to do.
And that happens at 30 days from the beginning. You start to accrue your actual Prism. You get, and that's like a running total, and it'll show you, because, like, you know, it starts to catch up, but you don't get to draw for 30 days for the ones that you started accruing 30 days ago.
and we could probably take a question or two, but I've got to jump off to head to work here in a second, so.
Okay, go ahead, USD Broker, you're next.
Okay, is anyone else just wildly curious about what the heck Zephy does for work and why he does it when he does it? It's a lot for
me. He's definitely, yes.
I'm a pulmonary critical care physician, and I run an army of people, so they're already working this morning. I just show up and, bless everything.
And then hide the closet and get on a phone. But I got a spaces to do, guys. Leave me alone.
Okay. That happens sometimes. Awesome. That happens sometimes, you know? So
wow, I love that.
Sometimes you hear beeps and whatnot in the background. Yeah, it depends on.
You remember
Fortunately, it's gotten a lot less busy this week because the number of COVID cases has plummeted. We're down to like one in our, in a couple of the ICUs I have like oversight over. So that's really good news. So hopefully I'm going to get some vacation time before too long.
You remember the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, Seffy, Catch Me If You Can. And he's like, I concur. Do you just do that? Like someone comes up and you're really.
The crazy thing is, like, I don't know what I signed up for, but I remember like in the maximum situation, like the federal government sent me a letter, and like you can't go anywhere for 90 days. I'm like, fuck this. Like, did I sign up to get conscripted here? Like, what do you mean I can't go anywhere? But I actually had to sign a thing saying I couldn't leave anywhere for a period of time during the most, like, the hardcore part of this. So, yeah, there are certain things I do that require, like, me to be there or the shit in the chat. One of those things. But, yeah, which I can't really get into, but it's kind of funny. Those kind of situations do arise, even if you are not officially let's say active duty military and things like that. There are certain scenarios where you'll get a letter from the powers that be and tell you you can't leave. You can't go on vacation. Yeah. Anyway, but things are going great now.
Well, I didn't bring up anyone else unless you want me to, Seffy, because if not, you want to cut it, we can cut it.
No, if you have, did you have any, Broker, do you have any question?
Oh, I did have like a real question, but yeah, that was cool. Yeah, so I don't know if anyone else is in this position, super interested in the second wallet strategies. So I had to buy an apartment and where I took out everything that wasn't Luna. And of course I live in a, where the short-term capital gains are just awful, right? And so I'm only mildly leveraged right now and certainly getting antsy. How would you walk back from like a, I don't know, I'm stuck at a full Luna position with zero extra dry powder. I don't exactly know what to do with myself anymore.
You don't have any?
I mean, I bought an apartment and that's where all the powder went and it was great, but that's where I am right now. So
you borrowed off your Luna or you?
What
you
no, about? it's only minimally leveraged right now. So it's only minimally borrowed, but like, you know, I guess I'm out of dry powder. I have a ton of Luna and I don't know what to do next.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, if you have Luna that's sitting around, like I said, one option is of course what we talked about, like staking in Prism. If you want to get price exposure to the Prism token, then it's actually more effective than simple staking. Other possibilities are you could do the just Luna B Luna strategy, which is quite effective.
Right.
And if there's any doubts about it, do that because it's simple and it works for now. And as long as that's a effective strategy, like why not, you know, take advantage of it?
Yeah. Thank you. That's so, what I'm doing for sure. It's just, yeah.
So I've got like Lucky and I have like every 3 days, you know, bonded Luna coming out of burns and we just go and like keep recycling that. That way, the reason to do that instead of doing it all at once might be, in order to, if like, let's say a situation arise where you need to either borrow off your bonded Luna or use it as some collateral for whatever reason, then you know within a period of, let's say, 9 days, you have three tranches of that coming out and you can use it if necessary, right? Like, let's say to capture, say, for example, a Luna dip and you want to borrow again because there's a deep drop, then that allows you to sort of take small nibbles. It's almost like dollar cost averaging your collateral. Availability. It's kind of weird. Yeah, but it works pretty well.
Oh, that sounds great. Thanks so much.
Do we catch? Oh, Marty's here. What's up, Marty?
So what happens on April 6th when the Prism staking starts flowing in? What's going to happen to the price of Prism, of Wild Luna? And Lejimmy, I really would like a Luna, Wild Luna pool. So I could just like go directly to Y Luna in one step. So what's the thinking today?
Well, to go to one step because you don't want to make it a two-step process, but it comes out to be about the same, doesn't it? If you swap to
the process. I want to put in one Luna and get, you know, 1.35, you know, Y Lunas, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I think you can do that now, can't you?
No, there's no pool that does that.
But I think it routes it automatically though. So if you just go to swap, and I think you can just do exactly what you just said. In the background, yeah. It'll route it.
If I go, Marty, if you go to swap and then you go and you put Luna, if I put one, I get 1.24 Y Luna.
Oh, I didn't even think of swap.
Yeah, the Prism
swap. I was just looking at the pools. Sorry.
Prism swap, the way it works is just like Osmosis. It's like the Prism token is the swapping token of the entire system. That's one of the reasons why I like owning the Prism token, because it has a value accrual from those transactions.
Oh, yeah.
Which every single time someone plays on Prism, it creates transactional yield to the stakeholder, which is sweet. So I, I just really like it. I like it more so maybe than even how Osmosis works, because it's more of an inflationary model. Like right now, I guess some of the Prism tokens are being emitted to holders as inflation. So when those vesting periods end, there probably will be some selling pressure for the Prism token. But the nice thing about that is if the Prism token goes down some in value, then I can ultimately get more of it, which is nice. Because then I can use it to further boost my Y Luna stash. So it actually could be work out. It could work out to be good if people sell the Prism token, then people that don't have it can get it.
So I, by the way, totally agree with you that my, you know, grade A blue chip Osmosis game is now over and replaced with the Prism game. Okay. And I'm not selling the Osmosis, just letting all that stuff, you know, generate income essentially. So back to this Prism thing. What's the tax thinking here? Is that so the Prism that comes out was a staked, you know, kind of Prism. And so, you know, there's no tax aspect of, you know, basically having new Prism. And then if that's true, you know, where can I borrow against my Prism? Is that going to be Mars, or where's that going to be?
In theory, when you claim your vested Prism, I think in most jurisdictions that is some kind of an income event, you know, and then when you restake it, if you don't claim it, like you just let it ride for a year, then it would be one taxable event, I think. But that defeats sort of the purpose of, you know, you almost want to claim and stake it because you're trying to boost your yield as time goes on. Otherwise, you wind up with less and less of the yield pool.
That out.
I thought the court case there down in Tennessee that's still ongoing was basically staking awards are not taxable.
I think staking awards are not taxable if you don't claim them. I think once you claim them, they hit your wallet. It's basically income, I think.
That was not my read, but definitely we have to like look at that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is I don't know how much of that is now necessarily official law in the U.S., too. That's a different entirely. You know, it might be a case by case nuisance that you have to deal with depending on the situation. So that's why I just gifted my wallet to my, you know, friends and family overseas, and they take care of this and like can deal the taxes there. So I just sort of like declared the amount as a gift and called it a day. So
I'll just comment.
anyway, not financial. I'll just
comment on like the next 25 days or so. You know, we're going to try to ship as many of the features that we've kind of leaked and talked about such that you guys can see additional value accrual for the Prism and ex-Prism holders. So that will definitely influence like what people decide to do when the vesting period comes up. But that's kind of like our tight deadline on, hey, we want to get out as much as we promise as possible. Like you mentioned, the limit orders, some of the charts that we have, and of course, like we're working on the details on and assessing the risk for collateral on both Edge, Mars, and other money market platforms.
Yeah, the collateral utility could be super useful, especially for people that need to have ways of generating immediate cash flow or income. With the permutations with kinetic money and whatnot. Represents some really good flexibility, especially if you have to go buy something with your you know, Terra money essentially, without reducing a substantial of your investment exposure itself. That's just amazing. I think kinetic money, once it's fully realized and audited and everything else, I think will have a lot of use, and again creates good reasons why people don't want to sell their Luna. And that's really, really important besides the UST adoption. So while Lucky likes the idea of, you know, as long as UST is adopted, it's great. I think having lots and lots of utility for Luna is super important as well, which is why I've been so like strong of an advocate for things like Prism or really any form of platform where Luna is usable as a collateral is super helpful for every one of us that holds it, and therefore creates a strong holding pressure for Luna. Just imagine like a, you know, if you're in kinetic money and you're like, okay, I'm going to borrow UST off of this, and I'm going to have a self-repaying loan that pays over 2 years. That's Luna that's essentially staked for a couple of years, possibly, while you go out and drive, you know, Lucky's Lambo or whatever. And you know, that's a pretty cool, you know, sort of concept in the holding pressure for Luna and the possible, you know, price appreciation for Luna that creates. It's pretty cool stuff.
So, Seppi, we have the Gumpster came back, and then we have people waiting to come up. Do you want to take one more and then recall it, or what do you want to do?
Let's just do Gumpster last, and then I'll head out here.
Sorry, guys. We'll have to get the ones requesting later. Go to Gumpster.
Hey, guys. Sorry. I was showering. I woke up late, and I caught between the whole the space here. I went halfway. I'm going to re-listen to this later. So if I have a question and you guys answer it, I'm sorry. I'll re-listen to the cast or the space again. But my main question I have is, I'm in a lot of different other blockchains like Avalanche. I am in Atom and Osmosis that you guys actually answered my question before. Is there, I guess, another lending platform, right, where I could probably lend, let's say, BTC or Ethereum out to get some UST, right? But borrowing it from another platform, maybe get some APR there, sending it to Luna, and then either doing, I don't know, put it in Anchor, put it in Prism, and gain rewards from like another chain while I'm borrowing against them to bring into Luna to do lever. Maybe this is too much. I'm not sure if that even exists, but it's
there's
just a question.
There's a lot of possible options. You might look, because Celsius has been posting some concepts in terms of UST and Luna yield directly on Celsius, number one. But you could technically borrow off your BTC on Celsius and possibly do a kind of a liquid stake idea right there on Celsius. I think their yields are pretty high. So you might want to dig into that a little bit before anything else. I think Celsius is one of the good options for low risk, low interest rate lending off of Bitcoin. Lucky, any comments on that?
No, I was going to say Celsius, BlockFi. I don't know what BlockFi has, but and then with the AVAX comment, I mean, I think someone just posted a screenshot. Soon you'll be able to use AVAX on Anchor, so you can actually.
Yeah, in fact, there's a vote on Anchor right now. If you guys are Anchor token holders, hop onto Anchor and vote for the addition of the SAVAX, which is staked AVAX, to be a potential collateral. So, yeah, Grumpster, you're going to have AVAX and subsequently at some point Atom as well as possible you know, things that you can import into Terra via various bridges and such to borrow off of.
No, that's awesome. That's exactly what I actually was thinking with Celsius, or even I think Nexo is another one, but I think they cut off the Luna rewards they had at one time already, if I'm not mistaken. And then the last question is, I kind of, Lucky, I was in your chat when you were going over the whole Anchor, beginner's lesson. Yeah. And I kind of overheard you guys saying that you're getting RP rewards daily. How do you do that? Cause 21 days is the, I guess when it takes for it to go, like, do you guys do Luna every single day?
Well, what we're saying is that we have a window of 3 days unbatching every 3 days. So, you know, 60 days ago or whatever it was, I started burning and then I'd catch the 3 day batch and then I'd burn again and catch the next 3 day batch and then burn again and catch the next 3 day batch. So I can have 7 of those running essentially. So every 3 days I'm getting something coming out and I'm reburning and then the next 2 days I'll get something back. Right. So
the nice thing about doing that, by the way, is let's say the arbitrage rate for your Luna to bonded Luna is not that favorable. Like, let's say you don't like it, it's only 1.6%, and you want to hold your Luna to do the arbitrage, like maybe hold it a week. You're not having to lose that much time in the unbonding process again with all of your amount of Luna. You're just only having to hold a small amount until you get a favorable rate. You stick that rate, so let's say you get 2.5%, boom, you arbit, and then you burn that. So by having numerous tranches happening every 3 days, then what ends up happening is you can take advantage of those without having to have your whole stash waiting a week while nothing's happening because you don't like the ARB rate. You see what I'm saying? So you're sort of dollar cost averaging into the ARB rate, but it also reduces your lack. You want to have your bonded Luna burning most of it at any given moment. And you want to have a little bit of it that you could hold until your ARB rate is nicer where you like it. And because the biggest, if you think about it, the biggest choke point is the time it takes for unbonding, right? So you want to have most of your Luna burning most of the time in that process and some of it able to hold out for good ARB rates. And that's what we're talking about.
Got it. Okay, that was what I was confused about. Guys, great job. I'm so happy I found you guys. You guys are doing an amazing job. Thank you.
I'm sure. Feel free to DM me if you have questions. My DMs are open. Always want help. So I think Lil Jimmy has a hand up. Go ahead, Lil Jimmy.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that you now on RB, you can even look at like C Luna Luna. It's obviously a bit thinner than Astroport's, you know, stable swap pools, but I have alerts on when there's a discount for C Luna by about, I think, like 3%. And then the other way around, I'm trying to get back in maybe around like negative half of a percent or negative 1%. So it's not quite as like guaranteed as what Lucky and Sefi are doing. But if you're watching that, you can get in more arbitrage swaps in, you know, 21 days.
Yeah.
And then lastly,
yeah, off of that legitimate, wasn't it? There was a 5% one night.
Yeah. There's sometimes it's large. Some people like, I don't know, rage quit out of it or something. But you can take advantage of that. And then for wrapped Bitcoin, if you want to generate some yield on that on chain, maybe check out like Solana, maybe like Katana or Friction Labs. They have like some covered call vaults that I think is generating around like 20% APY on wrapped Bitcoin. There are some like small waiting periods if you want to like withdraw for like a week or so, but definitely take a look at that. And then I see Sigma in the audience as well. They're trying to build the same thing on the like natively on the Terra ecosystem, which is essentially just like an options protocol. And then they kind of automate things for you with like these vaults where they set like pretty safe option prices and you're able to get these premiums. Like I think 20% is probably like the best yields that you can get on Bitcoin right now. And I've got a bunch of other vaults too, but that way you can generate additional income on your Apex assets. And if you want, you can sell those rewards for UST or Luna or what have you.
Hey, Jimmy, I had a question for you. I was looking at this. Your burn cycle, are they the same burn cycles as like the Anchor, or are you offset from them? Do you know?
No, actually, I don't know. I think tomorrow.
Because ideally, if they're offset, I would love to throw like then get in the middle of my other burns and then just maybe keep a real small pool, even on Prism. If you know what I'm saying.
I think tomorrow is the next batch.
Tomorrow is.
I'm not. Yeah, we're working on. I think like on our if you click withdraw on the slow burn on our platform, If you have anything slow burning, it'll tell you like how much and what day it's slow burning now. So
I was going to tell you guys it doesn't right now. So I have some that's coming out, and if I hit details, it actually shows me. Oh, now it shows me. Okay. It was showing me my Prism yesterday. Okay. It's fixed. Okay. Yeah. I see it.
Yeah. It was just like a little typo because we also have like that same window for a vesting period on the Prism farm.
So yeah. Yesterday it was like, my Prism's unburning now. I was like, that's not right. I was like, they'll probably fix it. Okay.
Yeah. It's fixed.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I'll take a look at that because I'm thinking of starting another ARB burn strategy through Prism, but real small quantities because obviously liquidity is not there. And then essentially every 2 days, I'll have something burning and coming out.
Yeah. I think how much C Luna can you work with at any given moment, Jimmy? Is it like how many Luna can you effectively do this without slippage problems?
Did you catch that, Jimmy? I think you asked, how much Luna do you think we can actually burn without moving the liquidity pool?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't done it too much myself, and not with like a huge bag or anything. I'm usually like way too slow every time I see it. And then by the time I'm on it on my phone, it's like gone.
Got it. All right, Sefi. I'm not going to throw people up then if you're good to go.
Cool. All right, let's break, guys. That's pretty. Hopefully people got some useful info out of that. Interesting strategies. Thanks, guys. Catch you later.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the CeFi Space, the Luna Hour, second wallet for Luna Strategies, recorded on Saturday, March 12, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes, and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sipping on a little bit of sin I've been giving, try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute reality ain't got limits, going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics, stretching out the distance. For instance, let me be specific, the risk is hedge funded the business, betting on the difference, ingesting all the research, sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first, sleep tight little dreamer, early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor, taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now, I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension. Something to endear myself a little bit. Something kind of, embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an awe sound. It's true. It really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. And it's fine if I don't know. I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll. Tip the first domino. Feeling abominable with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road. Gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground sore. And I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in. I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself, if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be seizing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little as to do with what everything is. But it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives under ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge, but important nonetheless.
Terra Spaces.